email that went out. Public, if you want to find out any information or any materials for this meeting, please go to the Minnesota House of Representatives website, then go to committees, and then to Taxes Committee, and you will find all the pertinent and relevant information. So with that, Ms. Griska, would you please take the roll? Present.
Marquardt, present. Lislegaard.
Present.
Lislegaard, present. Davids.
David's present.
Davids, present. Abaje.
Abaje, present.
Abaje, present. Carlson. Carlson. Detmer.
Detmer, present.
Detmer, present. Garofalo.
Garofalo, present.
Garofalo, present. Gomez.
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present. Her. Her.
Her, present.
Her, present. Hertas.
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Howard.
Howard, present.
Howard, present. McDonald.
McDonald, present.
McDonald, present. Miller.
Miller, present.
Miller, present. Moran.
Present.
Moran, present. Mortensen.
Mortensen, present.
Mortensen, present. Robbins.
Present.
Robbins, present. Sandell.
Sandell, present.
Sandell, present. Schultz.
Present.
Schultz, present. Stevenson. Stevenson. Swadzinski. Swadzinski. Joachim.
Present.
Joachim, present. Carlson.
Carlson, present.
Carlson, present. Stevenson. Swadzinski. We have a quorum.
All right, thanks, Ms. Griska. We do have a quorum. And we also now have some January 26, 2021 minutes to approve. Representative Lislegaard, would you like to move those minutes?
I would. So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lislegaard moves approval of the January 26, 2021 minutes of the Taxes Committee. Any discussion or changes? Anything else on that? Seeing no hands raised, I would ask you to briefly unmute to take the vote. All those in favor of approving the January 26, 2021 minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. January 26, 2021 Taxes Minutes Committee are approved. So today we are continuing a little bit on what we did yesterday. And so one of the efforts, of course, of the Tax Committee is to make our tax system more accountable and transparent to the taxpayers. And yesterday we heard the 2020 tax expenditure budget report by the Department of Revenue. And today we're going back to 2011. There was a tax expenditure review report that had been authorized by the legislature, came out in 2011. And we are really fortunate to have four of those people who worked so hard putting this tax expenditure review together. So today we have John Spry, We have Jenny Bjorn, Jay Hydrowski, and Judy Temple, who are going to make the presentation. And so what I would ask for members is just to wait at the very end to ask questions, and then we can go from there. So again, I really want to thank you four for being able to come in today. And first of all, for your work you did 10 years ago, and today for making the presentation. So I think I'm starting with Mr. Spry, is that correct?
Yes.
So welcome, if you would identify yourself and then please proceed.
Chair Marquardt, members of the committee, I'm John Spry, and I'm one of the six authors of the 2011 Tax Expenditure Review Report, Bringing Tax Expenditures into the Budget Process. This was a report that the 2010 legislature commissioned and spent approximately $60,000 to produce this report, and they charged us at ways of making the tax expenditure budget better, adding transparency to tax expenditures, and very importantly, how could you bring tax expenditures into the budget process? And so my co-author, Jenny Bourne, who's a professor at Carleton College, will present the next few slides about the report.
Thank you very much, Mr. Spry. Ms. Bjorn.
Yes, I think I am going to try to share my screen. We haven't worked out the details here, so let's see if that will work. So can people see this?
We can, I can.
So okay. All right.
I think you've got a kind of a split screen there. I don't know if you, there you go.
Okay. Perfect. Great. Thank you. So thank you very much for asking us to return and revisit our findings. 10 years goes by quickly. As you know from yesterday's presentation, tax expenditures are a crucial issue. Everett Dirksen once said about the federal budget, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon we're talking about real money. So although we have a budget surplus projected for the near future in our state, we also have a $1.3 billion shortfall for fiscal year 22-23. And so concerns about growth, jobs, budget deficits means we really can't afford not to take a look at where our taxpayer money is going. So you've heard about our tax expenditure report from last year. We got some nice comments on it. John will revisit a few of those. But I wanted to talk again about tax expenditures as opposed to direct spending. As you know, billions go toward direct spending, but billions more in the form of what you heard about yesterday, tax expenditures. I think of this as the Robert Frost part of the budget. It's the revenue not taken. And one familiar example in Minnesota is the exemption of clothing from sales tax, for example. Some tax expenditures piggyback on the federal system, and some are ours alone. Ski equipment comes into mind. As you have heard, the government, the governor and the legislature regularly review and reauthorize direct expenditures as part of the budget cycle. But tax expenditures receive little, if any, scrutiny and rarely, if ever, contain sunset provisions. So they simply go on and on without anyone asking whether they're still a good idea. And many tax expenditures could be reformulated as direct expenditures, and then they would fall under the budget review process. But we don't have a mechanism for that. Well, so what? Tax expenditures by spending by any other name is still spending, including tax expenditures. And tax expenditures can be quite large and seem to be getting larger, although many people may be unaware of that fact. Now, it's possible that tax expenditures are doing exactly what the citizens of Minnesota want, but because they undergo no systematic review, they're not exactly transparent, and they often don't even have a stated purpose, we really don't know. Let me notice the underlying critical trade-off. Choosing to have a tax expenditure means choosing not to have a lower tax rate. What's more, because of changes in the federal and state level since 1986, tax expenditures mean increasing complexity for both taxpayers and tax authorities. Now, fortunately, Minnesota legislators were aware of all this and requested the review report that we talked about earlier. And although we've received favorable comments and support from a wide range of reviewers, Minnesota has yet to take up the suggestions in that report. So we're glad to be back. Tax expenditures are everywhere. Minnesota is not the only government interested in regularizing the oversight of these. Federal government and several other states have taken a look at this important issue over the past decade. And you'll hear more about this in a minute from John, but here's just one example. Vermont, in assessing capital gains tax provision, found that, not surprisingly, the typical beneficiary was older and had higher income. No surprise. But the provision, despite its stated goal, did not encourage savings. So this is the sort of thing Minnesota might discover if it implemented a regular review of tax expenditures. You heard yesterday about the tax expenditure budget, and Minnesota is admired throughout the country for the carefully prepared report that it gives, and it's been extremely useful for us over the years. It was helpful in preparing the report 10 years ago. But the tax expenditure budget is an informational document. It's not an evaluative one. It defines tax expenditures somewhat differently, and you'll hear more about that from John. It offers no priority list, and it appears in even numbers years, so it's not especially useful as guidance for the budgeting process. So we made a number of suggestions for reviewing tax expenditures in our decade-old report, and I'm going to turn this over to John for some definitions, and I will be back.
Thank you, Mr. Spry.
So, as you look at tax expenditures, one of the really key concepts is the normal tax base. Some people will refer to this as the reference tax base. And it's important because we're trying to identify preferential parts of the tax code as deviations from the normal tax base. So one of the most famous professors of public finance, John Mikesell, from Indiana University, said.
And Mr. Spry, would you hold on just a second? So members, if you want to get a little larger screen, just right click on Mr. Spry there, and then you can pin him and it will show up larger. So I'm one that just learned this not so long ago. So, but it worked for me when I just did it. So
here, Markworth, you could also go to the view on the right-hand side top of the page and change it to speaker view.
Okay, very good. And thank you. Go to the right-hand side there and go to speaker. And what's that under again? What
part? It's under view, top right-hand side, and then go to, instead of gallery view, select speaker view.
Very good. All right. Thank you very much. I just want to make sure everyone could see. Thank you, Mr. Spry. Sorry to interrupt.
So I was quoting Professor John Mikesell that the most critical requirement for a tax expenditure budget is that it be driven by a clear conception of the intended tax policy. In other words, before measuring the tax expenditures as deviations from the normal tax structure, the normal tax structure must be clearly defined. So that's very critical. But then if we go to the Urban Policy, Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center, Dr. Marianne points out that identifying provisions as tax preferences is not without controversy. So you're going to hear a little bit about this, where our group 10 years ago with the Tax Expenditure Review Report had sometimes a little bit different definitions of the reference tax base compared to the Minnesota tax expenditure budget. So we have these seven criteria for tax expenditures. They're going to be pretty similar to what you heard yesterday from the tax expenditure budget. First, it has to apply statewide, even for local taxes. It has to confer preferential treatment on either certain persons, certain types of income, certain transactions, or property. It has to result in reduced state tax expenditure. So when we were doing the report, we found there were a couple basically dormant provisions of tax law that could be a tax expenditure, but nobody actually was using them, resulting in reduced tax revenue. It also is not something that's included as a expenditure itemized in the state budget. On the appropriation side, it does have to be included in the defined tax base for that tax, where the defined reference tax base is so important. It's not subject to an alternative tax. So yesterday you heard how in the tax expenditure budget, since there's an alternative motor vehicle sales tax, that's not part of the general sales tax. That's not by itself a tax expenditure. And then this final one is important. It can be amended or repealed by an amendment to state law. So for example, Minnesota does not tax the interest from treasury bills or bonds. That's a deviation from the reference tax base for the income tax, but it's not a tax expenditure in the tax expenditure budget or from the tax expenditure review report, because you don't have the power to tax interest on bonds issued by the federal government. So since that's a constitutional provision, you can't change it, so it's not a tax expenditure. For the normal tax base, we use the definition of income from all sources less expenses that are reasonable and necessary to generate that tax. So it's an income tax is not a gross receipts tax. The normal tax base for an income tax is revenue less all reasonable and necessary expenses to generate that income. So a tax deduction for an expense that's necessary to generate income is not considered a tax expenditure because it's part of the normal tax base for that tax. For the corporate franchise tax, we use straight line depreciation over the asset life that's specified as a proxy for economic depreciation. So if you had a different depreciation, like accelerated depreciation, that would be a deviation from this reference tax base and should be evaluated as a tax expenditure. And also, similar to the tax expenditure budget, we followed the Uniform Division of Income for Tax Purposes Act. This is the recommendation from the Multi-State Tax Commission of equal weighted apportionment, one third on payroll, property, and sales, with a throwback rule as the reference tax base for the corporate franchise tax. And third, when we go to the sales and use tax, this is where our group 10 years ago was the most different from the tax expenditure budget. We use as a reference tax base the consumer purchases of goods and services, not the sale of intermediate goods. So goods purchased for resale wouldn't be included in our reference tax base or be a tax expenditure. And things like equipment, capital goods, since they're intermediate goods, we would not have intermediate purchases of business inputs as tax expenditures. But the tax expenditure budget has, as you heard yesterday, included those. So I would like to turn this back over to Professor Bourne to talk about a framework for evaluating tax expenditures.
Thank you, Mr. Spry. Professor Bourne.
Okay. Great. Okay, thanks. So let me start with the basics. Tax policy has three guiding principles: efficiency, equal treatment of equals, and simplicity. Efficiency, allocating economic resources toward their most productive use, is perhaps the chief advantage of free markets. One goal of a successful and effective tax system is to interfere with this process as little as possible. We want our tax system to encourage people and businesses to do real things to generate profit, growth, and jobs, not to seek out tax-reducing opportunities. Equal treatment of equals is also good tax policy. Violation of this standard gives taxpayers incentives to look for low-tax sources of income or to buy untaxed products and services for tax reasons rather than economic reasons. Simplicity is the third principle that directs good tax policy. More simplicity leads both to greater compliance and cheaper administrative costs and enforcement, which is good for transparency and for preservation of public resources. Now, if we based a tax system just on these three tax policy principles, we would have far fewer tax expenditures than we currently do. All of these three favor broad tax bases and low rates. Justified tax expenditures would include only tax provisions that offset a market failure or negative externality, or that decrease the cost of tax administration by enough to offset lost efficiency or equity. So frankly, most tax expenditures in Minnesota and everywhere else, by their very nature, tend to violate at least one of these principles. Yet lawmakers might nevertheless use them to expand their set of laudable policy objectives, such as the ones you see listed, fairness, reduction of tax burden on targeted groups, and so forth. These can be very important policy objectives, and it's understandable why we see some of these tax expenditures. But if you want to evaluate a given tax expenditure in light of these principles and objectives, it needs to have a clearly stated purpose. If it doesn't, measuring its effectiveness in achieving that purpose is impossible. Unfortunately, most tax expenditures fail to have a stated purpose. So that's a good place to start. Now, of course, a purpose like let's reduce taxes paid by industry X isn't very useful. Identifying why we reduce taxes for industry X rather than say for industry Y is what really matters. So once a purpose is clearly stated, evaluating success requires measuring the tax provision's direct impact with regard to the stated purpose. And the information you need can vary, but it could include things like the number and nature of those who pay less tax, any change in behavior, any unintended results, and although they're hard to measure, indirect impacts. Of course, success in attaining the goal must always be compared to the cost of doing so. So when you evaluate a tax expenditure, it also requires an estimate of the foregone revenue or, where useful, a foregone reduction in tax rates. Recall, as I said before, anytime we have a tax expenditure, we are by definition choosing not to have a lower tax rate. Assessment of a particular provision also requires considering alternatives to achieving the same goal. Could a direct expenditure or perhaps a modified tax expenditure get us to the same place, maybe even at a lower cost? So that gets us started thinking about how you can review tax expenditures. In our report, we made several recommendations, in the first being to create a tax expenditure commission, which would work closely with experts at the Minnesota Department of Revenue, very talented people, and would also define a clear and measurable purpose for each tax expenditure. We also have a template for an 8-year evaluation cycle, and this is not set in stone. It's just one possibility of what we could do in terms of evaluating. Most states, when they're evaluating, have some sort of cycle. You can't do all of them in 1 year. And so you want to pick and choose, but make sure that you have coverage over a reasonable amount of time. So now I will stop sharing and go back to John for some specific suggestions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Spry.
Chair Marquardt, members of the committee, we have these specific budget process recommendations to bring tax expenditures into the budget process. And first, we propose that tax expenditures should be fully integrated into the biennial budget process so that the governor and the legislature would make explicit decisions about whether to extend, repeal, modify, or replace tax expenditures. To facilitate this, we are recommending a revenue neutral sunset for each tax expenditure that would be following its evaluation. So on the previous slide, you saw a possible evaluation cycle. So it wouldn't be that all tax expenditures sunset at the end of every single tax year, but tax expenditures would be sunset after the evaluation was completed. And under the sunset, the tax expenditure would expire and the rate for the tax would be adjusted downward to hold revenue constant unless the legislature reauthorized that tax expenditure. And so it's important, as we're going to be thinking about budget documents, this doesn't say that the legislature has to do a revenue neutral change when you change or eliminate or expand a tax expenditure. But by having the sunset be revenue neutral, that will let your budget documents really work well. And then the legislature makes its policy determination following the report on that tax expenditure from the tax expenditure review. Tax expenditures also should be classified by their core function to the extent possible so that you can compare tax expenditures to direct expenditure programs. That leads into some of our additional recommendations that in the future appropriation committees should examine tax expenditures alongside any direct expenditures within their purview that serve the same function. So if you have tax expenditures, provision in the tax code to help higher education, and you have provisions for student loan debt, obtaining degrees in the tax code, that the higher ed committee compare those provisions along with the direct appropriations, and then that appropriation committee would make a recommendation, and then the tax committee would still review any suggested change in the tax expenditures in that area of appropriations. We are recommending that state budget summaries, which you're seeing quite a bit of now, include total tax expenditure for each tax to show their fiscal impact on the difference between gross tax revenue without the tax expenditures for that tax type and net tax revenue after all of the tax expenditures. And tax expenditures could be included as a separate category in the legislature's joint budget resolutions. So I'd like to show you what these recommendations might look like. And again, you can see the fiscal years are a little bit dated because we produced this report a decade ago. But just looking at two type tax types, the personal income tax, what you see now is the net income tax numbers. When the next budget forecast comes out from MMB, you're going to see net income tax for 4 years. With our proposed incorporation of tax expenditures into the budget process, you would now see gross income tax revenue less each category of tax expenditure. Federal exclusions, here federal deductions, federal personal deductions, Minnesota subtractions, and then credits. And then you would see what you're seeing this budget cycle, which is the net income tax after tax expenditures. And then here you can see for the corporate income tax, something very similar, where you see the gross amount, and then you see the tax expenditures group, like exempt organizations, federal exclusions, federal deductions, apportionment, and then Minnesota subtractions, and then finally Minnesota credits. And then you would see what you're seeing now in the budget documents, the net forecast of revenue. We also have a recommendation for the legislature to require that the Department of Revenue disclose the beneficiaries of business tax credits online, similar to if you receive a direct grant or a state appropriation. You can go and look up those beneficiaries. If it's a direct appropriation, we are recommending symmetry and similar treatment of beneficiaries of business tax credits. And I'd like to tell you, because we did do this report 10 years ago, that there are a number of states that over the last decade have done some steps. They're different in different states. Obviously, Iowa borders Minnesota. And I would encourage you, as you're thinking this session, about a whole variety of things. What do you do to encourage people to get into farming? Minnesota has a tax expenditure for that. I believe Iowa has a tax expenditure for that. Iowa has really nice detailed annual reviews of selected tax expenditures. And so that's useful for us as giving you an example of what we're recommending this commission for tax expenditures would produce for you. But it also may give you information on similar policy challenges that Iowa has faced that Minnesota faces. Washington State has a 10-year review cycle. And again, you can go and take advantage of these if there's a policy interest you have. Yesterday, I heard somebody say things about policies for senior citizens and tax expenditures for Social Security. Well, you might be able to see if some of these states have policies that are tax expenditures and have reviewed them. Colorado did a very detailed review. Vermont has done two kinds of reviews. As Professor Bourne mentioned, they did a detailed review of their tax expenditure for lower capital gains tax rates. And then they do more expedited reviews of some provisions. Ohio has taken steps to put tax expenditures in their budget. And I kind of want to give you a little bit of advice. So this is coming from me because it's obviously about something that's past our report. But in Ohio, they put lawmakers on the commission and they didn't get the same kind of like really deep policy evaluation that some of the other states did. So if you feel like lawmakers are really good to do the policy analysis, then maybe you want them. Our recommendation is the lawmakers, the governor, play a role in selecting experts for a tax expenditure commission who are really good at doing policy analysis, distributional analysis, looking at benefits and costs and alternatives. Massachusetts has reviewed some tax expenditures. There's also a kind of a theme, Rhode Island, Oklahoma, and Maine, tax credits or tax expenditures for development. Some states have said, we're not looking at all tax expenditures like Iowa or Washington. We're going to look at tax expenditures for development or tax expenditures that are tax credits, one type of tax expenditure. And Delaware and California have some degree of evaluation in their tax expenditure budgets. So that's kind of an update on what has been happening in other states over the last decade since our report was published. And we would be happy to answer your questions. And there are four of us that are happy to answer your questions from the original group of six with you for the meeting today. And again, thank you, Chair Marquardt, for this opportunity to present the Tax Expenditure Review Report.
Mr. Spry and others, thank you so much. That is wonderful and really appreciate you coming in again. Members, are there questions? And I'm going to move here to gallery view. Please raise your hands. And we do, besides Mr. Spry and Professor Bjorn, we do have Mr. Kiedrowski and Ms. Temple here that could answer some questions also. So I will start out since I don't see any hands being raised right now. So for any of the four. So if the legislature was to approve setting up a review process for tax expenditures, what are some of the benefits you would see to taxpayers? So you've put out this report. Needless to say, there has not been a review process set up. We do look at the budget and so forth. But what would be the benefits, not just to the legislature kind of getting a better idea, but to the taxpayer? What are the benefits? Who would like to take that one on? Mr. Spry, do you want to start that one off? Or?
I'll go ahead and start. And we have Professor Kiedrowski is a former commissioner of the predecessor to MMB, so he may have some excellent ideas. Better allocation. If you're doing, think about this, might be a professor, and think about a homework assignment. You're now making policy about tax expenditures without having the kind of detailed information your colleagues in Washington State or Iowa have. And if you're a constituent, you would like government programs that are really working well. Those might be things you would want to expand. And so think about all the things where tax expenditures exist, in the sales tax, in the personal income tax, but there's also the direct appropriations. This kind of review process would give you a sense of, in higher education, should you get more bang for your buck? Could you deliver more value for the same cost by using direct appropriations for higher education or tax deductions or tax credits? And these questions can help your constituents by making not just more transparency, but ultimately better outcomes that would come from better information. And compared to the amounts of money and the amount of resources that are allocated by tax expenditures, a few $100,000 to review the tax expenditures seems really small compared to the benefits of a better use of taxpayer resources.
Thank you.
I'll also respond.
Professor Kiedrowski, and I know you were former Commissioner of Finance. And I would bring up something else, Professor Kiedrowski, is that I used to live in Moorhead. And in 1967, I was 10 years old, and I used to follow the Moorhead Spuds basketball team and listen to them on the radio. And I would go and watch them. And we had a really good team. And that year, the Moorhead Spuds made it to the state boys championship finals. And I was all pumped up. It was on television. I mean, we never saw a game on television. It was on television. I'm watching. And then there were people like Bob Zender, Jeff Wright, Jay Kiedrowski from the Edina Hornets, who ended up winning, I think, by about 72-55 or something like that, and the Spuds ended up taking second place. So, and then the next year, we went again, and the loss in the finals to the Hornets again. So, I'm not going to hold that against you today, but I do, if I was home today, I would have held up my scrapbook, because I got the scrapbook of that day, and I got a scrapbook of the all-tournament team, which you were on also. So at any rate, with that, how would tax expenditures have made the Moorhead Spuds a better team to beat? Just how would it make for a better transparency for taxpayers? Professor Kiedrowski.
So Chair Marquardt, that's probably why you joined wrestling team.
I think you might be right.
Mr. Chairman, thanks for those memories. It was a long time ago, I'll point out.
One of the things, let me give you a couple examples maybe to illustrate what's going on. The governor has proposed to increase the angel investment individual credit. Is that a good idea? It's not really been looked at by experts in the area, and should that credit either continue or be expanded, right? And here's another thought. Maybe the Appropriations Committee and the Tax Committee ought to meet together to look at something like economic development. Is the angel tax credit the best way to improve the economy in Minnesota? Or are some of the expenditures that are being currently done by deed a better approach to stimulating economic development? You can look at another couple as well. There's the nursing homes, boarding care, home sales tax exemption. Well, that seems like a worthy proposition. But at the same time, the state is spending money on the human services budget for medical assistance. A lot of that ends up going to the nursing homes. Should those two be coordinated? Should one be eliminated and another one be increased? I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Let me give you one final example, and that's the construction materials for low-income housing sales tax exemption. It's a long one. What about the Housing Finance Agency expenditures? Should those two be looked at together, and what's the most efficient way to stimulate low-income housing in the state of Minnesota? Right now, the Appropriations Committee is not coordinating with the Tax Committee in the consideration of those provisions.
Thank you. Any Professor Temple, do you want to weigh in on this one?
Sure. I'm Judy Temple. I'm Jay's colleague at the Humphrey School. I was just thinking about in this age of COVID and all the concern we have about students keeping up and keeping up their education, there's a long list of public and private tax credits and deductions for education that are in our Minnesota tax policy. I was just looking at this a few years ago, House Research put together a report on all the exemptions and credits that Minnesota offers. And I'm not really sure that everyone's aware of them. And if we had more attention to how these tax expenditures work, how many people are using them, what are the characteristics of people who are using them, it might actually, you know, promote other goals that we have. We're not necessarily encouraging you to get rid of all the tax expenditures. You might decide that there are some really worthy ones that you wanted to expand. In the education sector, for example, you can get credits for tutoring or academic summer camps and after-school programs. And these are things that, you know, in this age of COVID, some of these students might actually need more of this. And so a closer look at some of these tax expenditures might provide taxpayers and policymakers more information about how we can better promote some of these tax expenditures and how we can better target them.
Thank you. Before I call on Representative Gomez, I like what I hear about being able to kind of match with results and outcomes, and also what testifiers have said as far as, you know, working with the various appropriation committees and looking at to see if a tax expenditure, how it would match up with appropriations. And what we could find is actually that the tax expenditure, this is why I think I'm getting to, I mean, actually the tax expenditure maybe could be more efficient and working better than actually an appropriation, which would save an appropriation in that committee. So I think that's kind of the important thing, is we could see that some of these may be and are working very, very well. Representative Gomez.
Oh, could I actually just add one point?
Yes, please.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about you as politicians meeting constituents, and I think, you know, if it boils down to it, a lot of tax expenditures might be what the ordinary citizen would call a loophole. And so I suspect that many of you maybe get questions about these loopholes with people who are not necessarily aware of what they are or whatever. And I think that just having a better idea for you on the committee and legislators generally about here's the purpose for that and here's how we know that it works would give you better ammunition, or I don't know if I want to use those words, but when you come to your constituents and say, oh, well, let me tell you about why we do that, and here's how much it costs, and here's who gets it.
Thank you. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here for taxes mostly, but, you know, I'm a new chair, and today in my committee, I had the first sports reference that we've ever had so far during my tenure. So I'm also here to study the way that the chair weaves his sports references into his questioning. So I appreciate that was some high level stuff we just saw. So thank you. So I'm curious, because I think when I'm not sure if we had this report maybe presented last cycle, but I think that we didn't have much of information about the way that the fact that other kind of states have implemented some of these recommendations that you have in your report. And so I had a couple of questions related to that. First is sort of just a real like kind of nuts and bolts one. As I've been thinking about this commission that we're talking about establishing, I'm interested if you can share any lessons learned about how it is that you actually make sure that the legislature responds to the commission and that it doesn't like become another report that sits somewhere. Because, you know, we don't want this to turn into like some partisan battle space where we're like attacking the different kind of expenditures maybe that people of different ideological backgrounds want. And so I think when we talked about how to constitute it, I believe we have it as sort of a, you know, equal kind of from both parties, from both bodies. And so I just wonder if you can talk about the ways that some of the other states that have implemented this sort of like implement and systematize kind of the recommendations and how the legislature has reacted and like, have you seen, you know, a kind of a decrease in tax expenditures? That's sort of my thing. I think it's like, it looks like it's a lot of money and it's a lot of expenditures, or has stuff kind of stayed the same? If anybody has any comments about that, I'd appreciate it.
Representative Gomez wants to know how we can avoid SPLOTs, strategic plans languishing on the shelf. So, Mr. Spryer, who would like to address that one first? Mr. Spry.
Chair Marquardt, Representative Gomez. I think to keep the commission's reports from languishing, we have something that I don't know that any other state has done in our report's recommendations, and that is the sunset of tax expenditures following the receipt of the evaluation from the Tax Expenditure Commission, so that the legislature gets that report, and the sunset is the forcing mechanism. If a tax expenditure sunsets, the legislature is probably not going to let it just sunset. It may replace it with something else, reduce it somewhat, modify it, say it's really good, expand it. And so looking at the other states, none of them has had this forcing mechanism of the sunset. And Minnesota has a little bit of a history, again, from a decade ago with sunsetting on the appropriation side. And oftentimes there are things that were just sort of overlooked, and there was bipartisan agreement on the appropriation side in Minnesota, but sunsetting tax expenditures is really the thing that avoids the report of a tax expenditure commission just being another report.
Representative Gomez.
Great, thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I was talking kind of about the bill that we worked a little bit on this last session. So the bill that we had introduced did have that provision. So that's helpful to know that that's kind of the mechanism. Seems like it, like maybe, you know, because we have this initial period of reviewing existing expenditures and then kind of implementing this new policy of sunsets, that you might kind of see like not a lot of change in the first few years and then sort of more as you kind of get into the development of the commission. I had one other question. I guess I'm wondering, again, this is about comparisons to other states. It's my observation and that decisions that have been made about tax policy have contributed to or and like reinforced some really troubling kind of economic realities in our state. And that's, you know, kind of what we're seeing across our country, which is this just really rampant runaway wealth and income inequality, economic inequality, and the reality of many people not being able to make it in our economy. You know, when we hear things like half of households couldn't absorb an unexpected $400 expense, and that would cause this cascade. The other thing that's particular in Minnesota is that kind of when you go down the line, as you look at every indicator of quality of life, you see some of the deepest racial disparities between white people and the BIPOC communities of anywhere in the country. And you know, it's you know, I'm kind of new to taxes, but I've been kind of learning more and studying about some of the ways that tax policy over time, federal tax policy in particular, though, has contributed to that. And so I guess I'm wondering if there, because I can't remember what the three kind of like principles of tax policy are. They're like efficiency and legibility and these things, right? But I think there's also a way that we have to acknowledge the way that tax policy has contributed to these problems that are like serious economic issues that we need to confront. And I'm wondering if there's any state that incorporates that type of thinking into the analysis that they do of tax expenditures, you know, whether there's sort of like, you know, I think about it as scoring maybe or something, but that's not like the right kind of like way to talk about it. But you know, to really analyze, like, how is this expenditure contributing to or exacerbating or relieving the realities of economic inequality and racial inequity in our state? And I'm wondering if anybody's doing that across the country.
Representative Gomez, are you kind of referring to like a tax incidence study on who would benefit the most or? Yeah, Professor Bourne, could you maybe address that?
Well, what I was going to start to say is that our recommendation that there be a stated purpose, maybe multiple purposes, and then, you know, some of the specifics about who do we think is going to be affected by this. So if we have a policy, say, of a certain tax credit for inner city, you know, something or other, and we expect that that's going to improve or reduce the gap in employment between, you know, majority and BIPOC communities, and we have that as a stated purpose, and then we have people who are analyzing, you know, using statistical analysis, did it achieve that purpose? I think those are the sorts of mechanisms that all of us are really on board on. It's not just the three tax policy purposes or objectives that I mentioned, but anything else you as legislators see as important objectives of the tax system, one of which might be called vertical equity, which is trying to impose some sense of fairness. The only example I'm going to say from another state I already referred to before was in Iowa, I know, and I don't know what they did with it, but one of the lower capital gains tax rates has often been defended on the basis that it will increase savings. And they found in their state that, in fact, it doesn't do that. So if you're relying on that as an objective of a particular policy, and you find out that it's not achieving that, I don't know how Iowa reacted to it, but at least that's a start in thinking about, is this doing what we want it to do?
Representative Gomez.
That's great. Oh, yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciated the piece about the, you know, kind of lifting up the importance of establishing the legislative intent of expenditures. And I also just wonder if there's a way for us to kind of take another approach to it and think about, you know, are there unintended consequences of different expenditures with respect particularly to racialized wealth and income inequality. So thank you, Mr. Chair, I appreciate it.
Very good, thank you. And just for the record, Representative Stevenson joined us a while back and he is in attendance. Representative Robbins.
Thank you,
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate the presentation today. I was going down a similar vein as Representative Gomez, so we might have addressed it, but Chair Marquardt had talked about the importance of measuring effectiveness and outcomes. And so I just wondered if you could talk, you mentioned the Iowa example, which I really appreciated, but are there other examples of how other states have found effectiveness of these different tax expenditures, and what sort of analysis tools are used to demonstrate that? Thank you.
Professor Bjorn, I'll start with you.
Well, I'll say a little bit. I don't know about all of the states. I only looked at a few of them, but I know that what Iowa did is they pulled in a lot of statisticians and economists to say, let's apply the statistical tools that we have at hand to build some models to say, you know, if we're thinking about the effects on, say, a wage gap between one racial group and another racial group, and we have this tax policy, can we isolate the effects of that and in turn say, does it have the particular effect that we thought it was going to? I don't know if other of my colleagues, if you have looked at those different states to see what else they've done, but I do know that Iowa relied a lot on, you know, sort of experts who are used to using statistical methods to say, let's set out a model that says, we think this is going to happen, test that hypothesis, and then say, here's the result. John or Jay or Judy?
Anyone want to just go ahead and pipe up here? And
so I've looked at some of the states, and typically you have administrative data. So if it's a tax credit, it's a tax deduction, there'll be that statistical analysis you heard about how many taxpayers use the credit, what's the median or the average credit or deduction being used. And then there's that public policy analysis asking what if questions, like if this policy didn't exist as a tax expenditure, would people actually change their behavior or not? So that's something where you need expertise in statistics and economics. And also there is cost benefit analysis that is sometimes performed, and the analysts will suggest ways to modify the program to reduce its budget impact, or if you wanted to expand it, what would be the best way to expand a project that looks like it has a high benefit cost ratio.
Thank you. Representative Robbins, any follow up on that?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I have an example that may speak to both the questions that Representative Gomez had and the conversation about the unintended consequences. Young men and women in the United States receive the benefit of tax expenditure while they're in K-12 education and when they continue on to higher education in the form of government subsidies. And with a child, with a young man or a young woman who continues to go on to higher education, they continue to receive those subsidies, whether it's at a private school or a state university. But the student who decides to leave school after age 12 or after grade 12 no longer receives those subsidies. So he or she who decides to maybe continue farming or wants to continue farming on their family land, or wants to become an electrician, or wants to pursue another independent effort, does not receive the benefit of that tax expenditure. So we've invested in the human capital of the people who decide to go on to higher education, who will, according to some surveys, earn another $500,000 over lifetime income. But those who decide not to go to college are not only penalized by not receiving that subsidy, they have to pay the taxes which go to support that subsidy. Now that, I think, is an unfair and unintended consequences. I wonder if I don't know, Mr. Kodrowski or Professor Byrne would like to comment on that.
Chairman Marquardt and Representative
Kodrowski.
Yeah, you're pointing out something that is a potential problem within our expenditure system, as well as our tax system. I don't think it is as directly related to the tax expenditures as it is more the actual expenditures for the colleges and universities in the state of Minnesota. Let me just pull out one example of a tax expenditure that I was amused by, and it goes to the representative's point. There is a credit for teachers getting a master's degree in the state of Minnesota. Do we give other people a credit on their income taxes for going and getting their master's? Or should we give a credit for pursuing a electrician's certification? How about providing a tax credit for those that are going to go on in welding or something on that order? So I think that's where looking at each of the tax expenditures makes sense, as well as looking at the true expenditures on the other side of the equation.
Thank you. Anything further, Representative Sandell?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kudrowski. It just seems to me that those of us who have benefited from college education, either at a state school or in a private college, do receive a benefit. Today, we heard in the Human Services Committee, the University of Minnesota, and tomorrow will be Minnesota State, I guess, coming in and talking to us about the need for additional expenditures, and they're significant, and it does seem to me that we leave behind the people who are welders or who haven't yet decided what they're going to do, and particularly I think in our state, those who want to stay in small towns and rural areas and pursue activity, particularly farming, that do not necessarily need a college education, but that's it.
Thank you, Representative Moran.
Okay, thank you, Chair Marquardt. I will keep this short, but one, I just want to say thank you for bringing in this presentation around transparency and just see what we are doing along the lines of taxes. I think it was really an informational hearing, but I specifically want to just listening to Mr. Kandowski and Temple, along with board, as you talked about, having maybe the tax committee partner with the different other, the various other committees, you know, whether it's housing or whether it's education, and look at how we can, the tax committee can do their work in partnership with an entity that is also focusing on taxes. It makes sense. It's kind of something that I've been trying to, as Chair of Health and Human Service, recognizing that my work in Health and Human Service was not just impacting healthcare, but also education and other different, parts of our state. So I just wanted to say thank you, because I think that's a way that we can not just look at taxes through that lens of not just taxes, but how it intercepts with other committee work that we're doing, and that the work that we do is in many ways interconnected with each other, but often we do it in our own little space. So I just want to share that. I thought that was right on point, and it really does and you gave really concrete examples, because I think because we're in a legislative process, we're often busy doing what we do. And sometimes we don't have or take that time to see those interconnectedness ways that we can partner with other committees. But the concrete supports was point on too. So I just wanted to thank you all for that work.
Thank you. Anyone else have a question for the testifiers? I don't see any further hands raised. Okay, Professor Spry, Professor Bjorn, Professor Kudrowski, and Prof. Professor Temple, thank you so much again for 10 years ago putting this report together, but coming back and taking the time to address the committee. And I think you've left us with a lot to think about and also a challenge. You know, it's gone 10 years. And I think it's just as important now as it was 10 years ago when this report and the need for it came about. So again, thank you so much. And you'll have to kind of follow us along to see if we do something, but I'm hoping this year the taxes committee can do something in this area and add to the accountability and transparency to taxpayers. So thank you so much. Members, we do not meet tomorrow. Our next meeting will be next Tuesday. And we know we're going to be looking at 4 federal bills that have been passed that have conformity ramifications for the state of Minnesota. So with that, thank you all for your work this week. Have a good rest of the week, and we'll see you back next week. The Taxes Committee is adjourned.